Welcome to Broken Law, brought to you by the American Constitution Society, a 501c3 nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. I'm Jeannie Horesca, Senior Advisor for Communications and Strategy at ACS. As my guest writes in The Nation, quote, if the adage practice makes perfect has merit, be afraid, be very afraid. This August, a far-right organization is convening their third known practice session on how to drastically rewrite the Constitution to advance partisan goals. I'm thrilled to be joined by ACS President Russ Feingold to discuss his article, the upcoming practice session that he refers to, and why more people need to be paying attention to this threat to our founding document. I previously spoke with Russ and his co-author, Peter Prindeville, on episode 68 of Broken Law about their book, Constitution in Jeopardy, which details the history of constitutional amendment in this country and the backstory to the far right's pursuit of constitutional rewrite. We will be building on that episode with today's conversation. Russ, welcome back to Broken Law.
Thanks, Jeannie. I am a bit biased, but this, thanks to your hard work and others on our staff, has become an outstanding podcast that is really, I think, having an influence on a lot of key issues. So I'm especially happy to be talking about this subject, which is timely and getting more timely all the time.
And we will be discussing exactly that timeliness. But before we kind of get into what's coming up, I do want to do a quick review of some of the basics that we discussed on the last episode, specifically the concept of constitutional amendment. Our founders wrote a document that they thought was as good as it could be at the moment, but they did acknowledge and expect that it would be amended over time. Is that right?
That is absolutely right. Peter Prindeville and I particularly enjoyed realizing that this was basically the first constitution in the world, one of the very first written constitutions, essentially the first one that ever provided a formal mechanism for changing it. Jefferson sort of thought, well, there should maybe be a revolution or a new constitution every 20 years. But the founders agreed in Philadelphia in 1787 to put forward a document that had a particular provision. Article 5 of the Constitution said, you can amend this thing and you may need to amend this thing.
And lo and behold, we have amended it many times, but we've only used one method of constitutional amendment. So give us a quick civics lesson. How can the Constitution be amended, and how have we amended it?
Well, it was a bitter debate that sort of got to the point where they provided two alternatives. I mean, Washington actually said, look, I'm not signing this thing unless there's an amendment mechanism. He said, I do not think we are more inspired or have more wisdom or possess more virtue than those who will come after us. But there really were two different visions of how constitutional amendments should proceed. One was the one we're more familiar with, going through Congress. You have to get two-thirds of both houses of Congress to vote for the same language. Then it is sent to the states, and then three-quarters of the states have to ratify it. That's what Hamilton wanted. He wanted there to be a mechanism to sort of repair the Constitution, do one change at a time. But George Mason said, I'm not going to do this. We need another way to fundamentally change the Constitution, not having to go through the National Congress. So that's the other alternative, but it's never been used. And that is a constitutional convention can be called. Two-thirds of the states can apply for a constitutional convention. And if they do, at this point, it would be 34 states. It certainly appears that Congress is mandated to simply call for a convention. It doesn't have a vote say, well, is this a good idea? No, it has to do it. It's come close to happening in the past, but it's never happened. Of course, we've had 27, I believe 28 amendments, including the Equal Rights Amendment, but a constitutional convention, other than the original one that created this document, has never actually been convened. So those are the two ways it can happen. Keep in mind, in fairness to everybody here, that even when something is proposed to the Constitutional Convention, it still has to be ratified by three-quarters of the states. But those are the two ways, Jeannie.
So we've never had a constitutional convention. Do we have any sense of what it would look like if one were convened?
Well, you can sort of take a look at what they did in Philadelphia, but that doesn't really track with what Article 5 says and frankly doesn't say. Article 5 doesn't tell us how this thing will work. In fact, James Madison wrote at the time. He said, this thing doesn't really tell us how to deal with the convention and what would a quorum be. It was sort of put on at the last minute to make sure, frankly, some of the slave states wouldn't run out of the room. So there was never any real definition. So you don't have any real guidance about how delegates would be chosen, how votes would be done, what topics could be brought up. It's sort of just open. And that's one of the great dangers, is there really is no serious law on this at all. And it has to do with whether or not we're going to be able to maintain the kind of constitution we've enjoyed over a couple hundred years.
So I've never had a constitutional convention. It's the Constitution does not provide a lot of guidance as to what one would look like. And yet, as you've written in The Nation, we have a practice session coming up. There is an organization called Convention of States that is planning what they call a simulation of a constitutional convention. What is this?
Well, this is an attempt by a group called the Convention of the States, and there are other groups, to basically hijack this Article 5 provision and make all kinds of assertions about how it should work that isn't based in law. And as a result, it raises a great danger that they could possibly pull this off without people paying attention or realizing how dangerous it is. Here's why it's so dangerous. If they're able to get both houses of Congress, let's say the Republicans take over both houses next year, and they just say, look, we think there's 34 valid petitions here. We are calling a constitutional convention. Who's going to stop them? The Supreme Court doesn't appear to have any authority here. Clearly, the president has no authority here at all. He's not a part of the play. And it appears that Congress simply calls for it. And they may try to sort of set the rules based on the ideas that the Convention of the States people have, which frankly are calculated to make sure that white minority rule in this country is forever embodied in the Constitution in a way that would be even worse than the current huge problem we have with a malapportioned system of government. So that's the big goal, is that, you know, maybe they won't have the court all the time, Jeannie. Maybe they feel like they can't control Congress. All right. They say, let's come up with a bunch of phony ways in which we can interpret Article 5 to create a convention that can only really come out with an extreme right-wing agenda and proposals.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one thing better than having control of the Supreme Court interpreting the Constitution would be to rewrite the Constitution according to your partisan ideals.
That's exactly right. And that's why not just people like Rick Santorum and Scott Walker of Wisconsin, but Steve Bannon has now jumped on this as one of his top priorities. This is the big kahuna, if you will. This is the big pull. And it, you know, they've shown in the past that they're willing to exploit whatever they think they can. This whole idea of an independent state legislator theory, which was rejected by the Supreme Court, is one of these goals they have. Is they look at the Constitution, they go, well, you know, this really could mean this instead. And then they go to town with a lot of phony arguments and try to change our whole system of government. By the way, it's the same thing. They want to rely on malapportioned, gerrymandered state legislatures to decide elections, but also to pick the delegates who would be at one of these conventions. So it's the same scam, putting very extreme, unrepresentative, right-wing legislatures, as in Wisconsin, where we have a legislature that is far to the right of the state because of gerrymandering. That's what they're trying to do. And it is, in my view, completely wrong. But the problem is, it's very difficult to know how you avoid a constitutional crisis if the court and the executive can't really intervene.
So the Convention of the States has two parallel efforts underway. One you've talked about, right? They are going state capital by state capital, urging state legislatures to pass applications, basically, for a constitutional convention, right? With the goal of forcing Congress to actually convene one. So that's one effort that they're certainly gaining momentum on. They've had a number of state legislatures do as they've requested. The exact number is up for debate, but that's one effort. The other effort is the one that involves this upcoming simulation where they're actually practicing holding a convention. So they're so confident that they're going to get this thing called that they want to practice it and make sure that if and when there is a constitutional convention called, they've got their ducks in a row. They know how to manage it, control it, maximize it for their advantage. So I want to talk about this simulation. It's coming up in August. It's not the first time they've done this.
That's exactly right. And we have to look at this and what this really is. This is a very careful, well-planned effort that began, this modern effort for this big sort of change in the Constitution through Article 5, really began with this sort of Tea Party movement, basically in opposition to President Obama. All of a sudden, there's all these resolutions for this kind of thing. And the people behind it, you know, the Mercers, the Koch brothers, Steve Bannon and others, they don't fool around. They have all kinds of money here, and it's being fueling it. And so in addition to saying, hey, let's pass petitions and see what happens, they, oh, no, no, they don't want to leave it to chance. They are training right-wing state legislators to be the delegates. And so this is the third time they've held a convention or a simulation. There was one in about 2013, and there was some criticism, but we've read, and Peter and I have documented, that they said, well, this wasn't quite carefully done enough. So in 2016, they held a dramatic simulation in Williamsburg at the exact same location where they're going to do this in early August. And, you know, some people laughed at it, some in the left and some in the media said, well, you know, they had a guy dressed up as George Washington in a video, and it was, you know, kind of made fun of it. But as we wrote in our book, this thing was very serious and very carefully done. For several days, they met, they made resolutions, they made amendments, they voted for some things, they voted against some things, they decided who should be voting and what the voting would be done like, and that's the critical thing there, that the way they decided the voting should be done. But it was a very carefully planned thing. And so there were legislators there from all states. And what they're doing now, and yeah, it's a number of years later now, you can see the gradual intensity. In 2023 now, they're going to have another simulation that could be very, very dramatic and could be sort of a look, we think we're ready kind of thing. So let's say, as I said, the legislative situation in Congress is different. They may be ready to make to pull the trigger on this thing after this training. So this will be a session, and I can certainly describe what they've proposed in the past if people want to know. But the most important thing, and I'm sure you want to talk about this, is how they think the voting should be done.
Yeah, I have visited their website and kind of checked out some of the materials that they have. They have a video that claims to explain Article 5, how Article 5 works, how a constitutional convention would work. And in that video, it says that during a constitutional convention, each state would get one vote in terms of, I assume, approving like proposed amendments and then finalizing amendments. So one state, one vote.
Right.
Why is that a problem? Because it sounds a lot like the Senate, where every state gets two senators no matter the population.
I think you and I know why it's a big problem. Look, they didn't choose this name of their group by chance. Convention of the States. It doesn't say that anywhere in the Constitution or in Article 5. It's a sleight of hand. It is a scam. In fact, the whole idea of this Constitution was to get away from one vote, one state, and to have the people, we the people. It doesn't say we the states, it says we the people. But the only way they can get away with this white minority rule and domination is by having it be that when they vote on an amendment in one of these conventions, or when they vote for the whole thing, as you said, it would be like majority vote, one vote per state. And so Wyoming, with a white population of 576,000, gets the same voting power as California, with 39.5 million people. Same thing for North Dakota versus New York. And so I don't think we need a roadmap to figure out what we'd get. We already have a crazy electoral voting system for president, the Electoral College, that is totally distorted toward those kinds of constituencies. We have a U.S. Senate that is distorted that way because you have two senators for all states. And then you have a filibuster that makes it even worse. You put this on top of it, and what you have is a genuine regime. It's a regime of domination by a small minority that should not control the people of this country in the 21st century. There is no way the founders of this country would have wanted that.
I mean, it does replicate exactly what we've seen with previous presidential elections and in the Senate, where people representing a minority of the American people get to shape this country. And so a minority of people have elected a president, a minority of the U.S. population have in terms of representation in the Senate, have enacted legislation, vetoed legislation, all of that. And now we're talking about a fraction of the American public rewriting the Constitution. And let me mind you, most likely a white minority.
It will be. And they we don't have to guess what they would do. Yeah, I think it's reasonable for people to be concerned, and they almost certainly would try to ban abortion and ban gay marriage and ban affirmative action forever and do horrible things to the right to vote. But they showed us at that 2016 convention where they had these votes. They debated for days and then they voted. And here's what they voted for. They voted to cripple the power of Congress and the executive to deal with issues through legislation. So, for example, think about dealing with the COVID situation. They would gut that. They would gut the administrative agencies of our country that help us solve problems. They're already trying to do that through the courts. That's going to be the biggest case of the next term. But, you know, if people want to know, what does that mean? It sounds kind of technical. Well, it means the Environmental Protection Agency couldn't do anything about climate change or with regard to the Clean Water Act.
I just want to point out, like, the Supreme Court's doing a very good job of gutting the EPA. But again, why wait for the Supreme Court to do it piecemeal when you could do it in one fell swoop by amending the Constitution?
And the Supreme Court can change.
Right.
And in the future, which may take a long time, but, you know, They want to play the long game here. So they destroy the ability of us to solve problems. They eliminate the income tax. And their greatest favorite proposal is what I call the John C. Calhoun proposal, which is the doctrine of nullification. They think that 30 state legislatures, not the governor, not the people of the state voting, all they have to do is say, we don't like this federal law, it's gone. We don't like this administrator. So I call that the John C. Calhoun provision, and that's their most popular one. I don't have any doubt that they'll re-up those. Oh, they want to do term limits and other things too, but this opens the door. And by the way, they claim that this can be limited just to certain topics, and that also has no basis in the Constitution, and most constitutional scholars agree. Once the convention is convened, the convention is a convention. It can make up its own rules. It can make up its own process, and it can make up what it wants to cover.
I want to address that, actually, because there are some folks on the left who have thought that a constitutional convention could be a good thing for progressive values, right? I think if you gave a group of progressives the opportunity to rewrite the Constitution, they would have some ideas too, right? There's a long list of founding failures of the Constitution that warrant a conversation about constitutional amendment. So what do you say to folks who say, you know, if you can't predetermine the rules of a constitutional convention until one is convened, let's have one convened and then we'll just make sure, you know, the right people show up and we will hijack it for our purposes. How do you address that concern or that objection?
Well, it's not going to be like a public rally. They can't just show up. They're going to be chosen in a certain way. And if the certain people control the Congress, they're going to figure out a way to make sure that it's these state legislators. These folks who are well-intentioned, the ones you're talking about, look, they're the wolf pack's trying to do something about campaign finance. You know, there are these guys named McCain and Feingold that cared about that quite a bit. You know, I understand that motivation, but they won't be in the room. They won't be able to be there. They're falling for, and it's understandable why they sort of have said this, because they started talking about this. Scholars I respect, like Lawrence Lessig of Harvard, Sanford Levinson of Texas, they sort of formulated their idea that this would be a good thing to do before this thing really got going. And now Professor Levinson is admitting that, you know, there are problems here. And that unless you change the procedure somehow through a constitutional amendment to change Article 5, you won't, the folks that think they can get in there and win this thing, that's not what's going to happen.
Well, and this is a situation where maybe it's a cliche, but practice makes perfect. Like, right? There's a reason they want to have their people practice this so that they have their ducks in a row. They have their marching orders. In the event that something is convened, they want to own the process from the get-go.
Yeah, let me describe how they would do this. So, you know, they say, hey, there's 34 petitions. Well, you know, as you already indicated, how you count those and whether you can count ones about slavery from before the Civil War, there's all kinds of crazy counting systems. But does it matter if the House and the Senate both say, oh, there's enough here? Somebody would, of course, go to the Supreme Court and say, you can't do this. And the Supreme Court may or may not like it, but it's probably going to say we can't touch it. Or even worse, they might say it's okay.
Because there's nothing in Article 5 that gives any role to the judiciary.
Court has no role. President has no role. It is taking back. And this you have to respect. This is a legal mechanism.
And that was the intent, is to empower
the people.
The original
power of the people. Yeah. That is legitimate. But the idea that it can be done in this way is almost absurd, given the purpose of this Constitution in the first place.
You're listening to Broken Law, brought to you by the American Constitution Society. If you're enjoying Broken Law, consider becoming a member of ACS today. You do not need to be a lawyer to be a member. As we discuss so often on this podcast, our laws and legal systems impact all of us. By supporting ACS, you support Broken Law, our work to diversify the federal bench, and our advocacy for Supreme Court reform. You also become a member of our nationwide network. Learn more about ACS by visiting our website at acslaw.org. And now, back to the conversation. I want to acknowledge one thing, which is, as we've said repeatedly now, Article 5 is incredibly vague, which means you could have a constitutional convention that is highly democratic. You could have a convention where you ensure that the country is well represented. Right. It would allow for that.
Yes.
The issue is it doesn't require that.
That's right. So, you know, Peter Prindeville and I wrote in the Constitution in Jeopardy some ideas about how you could change Article 5. What you could do is make absolutely sure that if there were to be a convention, that the delegates would have to be ratified by the people of the state in a popular vote. That could either be done by the legislature proposing people and then having a vote on them, or people could come to a convention and run to be delegates to the convention. So you could have that, and that would make an enormous difference. But unless you nail it down through some clarification of Article 5 through a constitutional amendment, you have no protection. But yes, there is a way to make it popular. And, you know, in other countries such as Chile, They're going through this whole process of the last few years. I happened to be there a couple of years ago, and, you know, they elected delegates from all over the country. They rejected all people who were parts of political parties, and they came up with a draft constitution. It didn't pass, but it was a big thing. And now, frankly, a more conservative group has successfully called for a constitutional convention there, and they're having a convention, and it will be voted on. But, it's based on popular sentiment. It's not based on a cheating, basically, a gerrymandered system.
So you're talking about using the tried and true method of constitutional amendment in Article 5, right? The method that we have used before to amend the other provision of Article 5 regarding constitutional convention and provide more specificity to it.
Right. I think the only way it would work, given the problem with the so-called runaway convention, is if, let's say, a bipartisan commission came together. We could get this and say, look, we think these changes, and we agree parties on both parties, we agree that these changes to Article 5 should be done. Then 2/3 of both houses would have to agree to it, and then 3/4 of the states would have to agree. Then you could have a different kind of constitutional convention that, yes, frankly, I think we need to change the Constitution. We need to get rid of the Electoral College. We need to create a right to vote, which is not in the Constitution. We need to have a provision about the environment and climate like they do in almost every modern constitution. I like to joke around and say the founders were really bad at climate change. They didn't get it. So look, we have a document that's way too hard to amend in this regard. It's the hardest one in the world to amend in terms of doing it through the route that's usually used. So we're really in a sort of a Scylla and Charybdis situation, a very dangerous convention or a completely obscure way to change the Constitution, and we can't fix it without opening the door to let a bunch of people on the right to create something that looks nothing like America in the 21st century.
Do you think then that there should actually be more conversation in this country about constitutional amendment? Not the conversation that Convention of the States is trying to have in this kind of very cloak and dagger method, but a genuinely public conversation about amending the Constitution, and not piecemeal, but we're talking about a pretty holistic set of reforms.
When Peter and I sat down to write the book, this is why we said we wanted to do this. this. As you may have noticed, I'm talking about it nonstop during the last year because we want a national conversation. What is going on here is this training and simulation is basically under the radar, and they're trying to do this quietly and then jump on us the last minute. Having people talk about it, and now it's being recognized, the Guardian has written about it, the New York Times, Washington Post. It has become, in the last year, frankly, thanks a lot to our book, it has become a real major topic of discussion. And that's the way it has to be, because this is the power of the people of this country. And these folks in the Convention of the States are trying to steal it from the majority of the people of this country. So it is crucial that there be an open, frankly, there's no more serious topic than people understanding how constitutional change works and how it can be done fairly and legitimately, and also be aware of the dangers of it being done the opposite way.
Is there any expectation that the simulation that's taking place in August is going to be open to the public? Is this meant as a, like, come one, come all, come see how this operates?
Not that I know of. I'm guessing they're going to have some people at the door there. My brother-in-law.
You think if you showed up and are like, hey, I'd like to participate,
might not be welcome. My wife and my brother-in-law went down to the Wisconsin State Capitol because I knew they'd recognize me, so I didn't go. And they attended a rally of these folks where they were trying to get another resolution passed. And Santorum was there. And Mike Meckler and the people that are doing this were at the event. But that was meant to be something open to the public. I'm guessing that this simulation, I think some reporters ought to try to get in there and see what's going on. Of course, we have some accounts of what happened in the last one, but I'd be very surprised if it was completely open. But, you know, that's why one of the reasons is why I'm talking about it. Let's have people watch and see what happens on August 2nd through 4th. It's an important moment.
But as we've noted, and I really want to drill this point down, even if you could get into that, what you would see is not any indication of what an actual convention would look like, because they're going into this simulation with a preset of rules that they're intending, right? The delegates have already been selected. They're going to do a one state, one vote method. And so it's going to look orderly.
Oh, it will look perfect. Yeah.
If we actually convened one, it would be chaos.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if they're able to convene this thing, what they'll do, first thing they'll do is make the voting rules. They'll pass by majority vote the idea that each state has one vote. And they'll say, and we're going to bring up, we can do this and we can do that. And so they'll set it out. It will be very calm. It will be very orderly. And it will look like just normal business as they take apart our Constitution. You know, so that unless there were people that would dissent.
Well, there would be blue state. I mean, there would be blue state legislatures choosing delegates, because you would need delegates from all 50 states.
Yeah, but how would they be chosen? I mean, yes, they could be there, but my guess is they could be pretty easily voted down.
Yeah. Oh, they would be, they may be a minority, but
they
could
be there, but. Like, let's say they want to talk. Let's say it's like the Tennessee legislature.
I was just going to say, oh, my God.
Look, you can't say that they have been disorderly about this. In fact, the problem is they're very orderly. They've got a huge amount of money behind them, and they're trying to pull the wool over our eyes. And so one of their techniques is to be very professional about it, and we can't be fooled by that.
So if folks want to learn more, there's a Convention of States website that is highly misleading, and they can visit it at their own discretion. But if folks want to learn more about this, they can read your book, The Constitution in Jeopardy. What about folks? There you go. What about folks who want to engage on this? If somebody is concerned, what can they do?
Well, and the good news is that people on both sides of the aisle are concerned about this. So you should talk to both your state legislators and candidates for state legislature and to candidates for Congress, because they both have a role. The most important is the state legislators. Say, look, you might be a Republican and I'm a Democrat, but I just don't want you to vote for one of these resolutions. As you know, Oregon recently rescinded its previous petitions like this. New York's looking at that. Illinois did it too. So that can be done. And so getting it on the radar screen of candidates for the state legislature is crucial. The other is to say to members of Congress, look, don't be fooled by this movement, and don't vote to acknowledge that enough petitions have come, because it's not a valid method of counting. But the state legislative races would be the most impactful
Well, and I feel like this is just one of those issues, and we have so many of them on the podcast, where part of the call to action is just to talk about it. We need more people to be aware of this, which means when you get together with your friends and chat about whatever, bring up, hey, did you know that there's an effort to rewrite the Constitution? Right now, we need that conversation to be happening at more kitchen tables or in more coffee shops and more gatherings.
That's exactly right. I've had thousands of conversations about that. And I get the same reaction from a person I might meet in a coffee shop to the top constitutional law professors in the country who I contacted about this as we were looking for people to support our book. And you know what they all said? Oh my God, I didn't know this was happening.
I haven't heard anything about this.
And you know what? Neither had I until about 2013 or 2014 when I was teaching law. And I decided to create a course about Article 5 because no one had ever done it. So there's no shame in not knowing about it. And so everybody needs to be part of this national conversation as often as possible.
Yeah, and just to note that this the quietness of the simulation is intended, right? That's if you were doing something that was democratic and representative, you would be screaming it from the rooftops. You would be inviting the press. You would want it to be well known. The fact that you haven't heard of this, that you don't know the Convention of the States, tells you what kind of operation they're running.
Well, you know, a good way to summarize that is the title of our fifth chapter. It's a quote from these guys. It says, what Trump and the Tea Party couldn't do, they want far more, and they want to do it through a means that will gut our Constitution.
Well, Russ, I hope more people speak up about it, having listened to this episode. And again, we'll link to both Russ's book and to his article in The Nation, which discusses the upcoming simulation. And we'll be tracking that as well. But as always, Russ, it is wonderful to speak with you. Thanks so much for coming back to the show.
Excellent job as always. Thanks, Jeannie.
Thanks again to Russ for returning to Broken Law. If you missed my previous conversation with him and his co-author, Peter Prindeville, I encourage you to go back to episode 68 and check it out. Summer is a great time to catch up on all your missed episodes, so take a minute to browse our complete episode library. And make sure to follow us on social media at ACS Law on Twitter, at American Constitution Society on Instagram, and using hashtag Broken Law Podcast. Together, we'll speak truth to power about the law, whose interests it really serves, and whose it does not.